Hey, I'm Dr. Taylor Petrie, and you're listening to Gospel Tangents.
It's the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Pratt. I'm excited to introduce Dr. Taylor Petrie from Kalamazoo College, which is harder to say than it looks. We're going to talk to him about his fantastic new book, Tabernacles of Clay, and we're going to talk about how LDS rhetoric has changed from the 1950s to the present day with regards to interracial marriage. Do you think there might be changes similar with LGBT marriage? We'll talk about that in our next conversation. You don't want to miss it. Before we get there, I want you to know that I'm giving away a free copy of Taylor's book, Tabernacles of Clay. So if you're interested in this copy right here, sign up on our website at gospeltangents.com/Petrie. And that's P-E-T-R-E-Y. And you'll be entered in a drawing to win a copy of this book right here. So I will do that drawing after episode 3. And so make sure you get in within the next week or so, or it'll be too late. So once again, sign up at gospeltangents.com/Petrie, P-E-T-R-E-Y, and you can win this book right here. So sign up today. Now back to our conversation.
All right, welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm excited to have an amazing Harvard-trained historian. I think you're my first. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody from Harvard, but could you go ahead and tell us who you are?
Sure. I'm Dr. Taylor Petrie. I'm a professor at Kalamazoo College of Religious Studies. And I got my graduate degrees at Harvard. And so that's that backstory, I guess. And that's the basics.
Did you park your car at Harvard Yard?
Many times, yes. Got lots of tickets, too.
I would like to get a little bit more of your background. I understand. Well, I know you got your PhD is a divinity degree or something like that.
Yeah, so the Divinity School is one of the schools, like the law school and the medical school and so on at Harvard. The Divinity School has been around for a couple of hundred years now, and it was originally developed to train ministers, but of course, which it still does, but of course also has an academic mission as well. And so that's where the sort of seat of religious studies is at Harvard is there. So that's where my master's and doctoral degrees are both from.
Oh, that's cool. So you got your master's and doctorate there. Now, are you a Red Sox fan?
You know, I went to lots of Red Sox games, but I stopped caring about sports a long time ago. So,
That hurts my heart.
I tried. Once I bought a TV and I was like, I'm going to get into sports and I'm going to care about sports. And about a third of a way through a football game, I was like, this is as boring as I remember it was.
Tom Brady, we can't talk about him. He's gone now. I haven't gotten on board, but we got Cam Newton now on the Patriots. So
it was fun living in Boston I was there for a decade when they won the Stanley Cup, the World Series, and the Super Bowls, you know, just constantly during that decade. So there was always a party going on. It was a fun time.
Great decade. It's been a great decade, and we can kiss 1918 goodbye. So it's good. You know, 1918 was when they had that darn pandemic too. And this is my first remote interview. I don't know if I like this, but we're gonna try it anyway. So before that, did you go to BYU or anything? Where'd you get your bachelor's?
I grew up in Utah, but I ended up going to New York City to Pace University for my undergraduate degree. So I then went on a mission and came back and started studying religion there, and just fell in love with the discipline and figured that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Oh wow, that's awesome! What was your bachelor's in?
Philosophy and religious studies.
Oh wow! So you're just all in there. That's pretty cool. So Taylor, one of the interesting things that about our relationship is we've teamed up with the Dialogue Podcast Network. So can you talk about a little bit about your time as editor of Dialogue and how we got together, both of us?
Yeah, I started the Dialogue Podcast Network not long after I became the editor of Dialogue, because I really wanted to get a number of great shows that were out there like yours into a kind of single collective where we could all promote and talk about each other's shows. And so the Dialogue Podcast Network emerged as sort of this group of thoughtful and interesting, diverse voices that were working in Mormon themed podcasting. And I was really excited to have you join that and work with us to kind of, you know, work with all of these other shows that that have such great things to say about Mormon history, about contemporary issues, about gospel doctrine teachings, and all kinds of different stuff. So, yeah. So thanks for being a part of that.
Yeah, well, it's been fun. So just for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a kind of a lot like Patreon in a way. There, it's more of towards educational sort of a thing. So the website is Lyceum, L-Y, I hate spelling it, L-Y-C-E-U-M.fm. And you can subscribe to the Dialogue Podcast Network. So Gospel Tangents is in there. Mormon News Report is in there. And so the nice thing is, you know, some of us only post once a week. I try to post about two or three times a week. And so if you're really into Mormon themed podcasts, you can go to one place and you can get everybody. And it's, you don't have to wait a whole week for the next episode or 3 days or whatever it is. So it's updated quite a lot. So it's been fun to be on there. And how did you get hooked up with Lyceum? Can you tell that story?
Yeah, one of our board members is works with Lyceum and works in podcasting, and so we really wanted to leverage the sort of resources that he had to offer us, and so it just seemed to be a great fit and a great platform for the kind of work that we did. A lot of great benefits for members who join with direct contact with the shows and with other early content as you do, and sometimes there are some bonus episodes for other shows that only subscribers get. So it just seemed to have a lot of the features that we were looking for, and it was a great way to to continue to create the community of podcast listeners that are out there.
Yeah, so it's free to listen. I'll post my episodes there as well as on my podcast, but you'll also get Mormon News Report and Beyond the Block and some other things like that, and of course Dialogue. I know you've had some Sunday school classes on there as well. Mm-hmm. So it's fantastic. So, well, that's awesome. Well, I've got your book here.
Oh,
Tabernacles
boy.
Of Clay. There it is. I've read the whole thing.
Oh, my
so
God.
This is okay. Funny because I have to tell you, I think you hit all of the hot button topics in our thing here, because you talk about blacks, feminists, and gays, and I'm like, wow, you kind of hit the trifecta there, didn't you?
Thought, you know, sorry, I had to get my dog who was scratching at the door. Rather than make him scratch the whole time, I figured I'd bring him in. Yeah, I wanted to bring those three things into conversation for a couple of reasons. First, that is sort of the broader trends of the field, what we call intersectionality of sort of thinking about the interrelationship between these various categories of identity. And also I was just seeing it in the sources themselves that these things were overlapping and that they needed to be put into conversation. Whereas we've had the history of race, we have LGBT histories, and we have the histories of women. I thought, you know, we really need to tell these stories as a sort of single story. The same characters are involved in all of them, you know, and the same logic in many cases is sort of working behind the scenes for the ways that church leaders are thinking about those issues. So I wanted to kind of bring them all together, and yeah, it's a sort of, one, two, three punch there a little bit. It's kind of hard sometimes, but
it really is. And I have to tell you, sometimes it seems like when I talk about race issues, or if I talk about feminist issues, or if I talk about gay issues, people are like, why are you talking about this stuff? This, but I'm like, because it's fun to talk about, and I like to talk about it. And if you don't want to listen, you know, you can skip this one. But I think these are all really important topics. And so I was really surprised because we've got the little rainbow here. I thought this was all going to be about, you know, LGBT issues. And it says sexuality and gender in modern Mormonism, kind of as your subtitle. And so I was really pleasantly surprised, because I have to tell you, the priesthood ban and racial issues is kind of one of my favorite topics. And so it was really cool because that's where you start out. So I'd love for you to kind of talk a little bit about the history of race in the LDS Church and how that kind of ties in with gay issues as well.
Yeah. So the typical way that we have told the history of the priesthood ban has been primarily around sort of focusing on race as the exclusive category. But when you started, when I started looking at the conversations that were happening and what church leaders were saying about race in the 50s and 60s, I saw immediately that marriage was one of the big concerns. Why were they in favor of segregation? Why did they oppose civil rights? Why did they even have church policies that would prevent marriage in the temple? Because they were really concerned about interracial sex, right? They thought that this was a big problem. And we had this whole ideology about race and racialized groups, you know, that this group was destined to do this and this group was destined to do that. And they worried that interracial mixing would dilute the sort of divine designs for those particular races. And so I immediately saw that the question of race was really entwined with questions of sexuality. And as of, again, as a sort of modern parallel to issues around same-sex relationships today, I also wanted to show that the question of who could marry who wasn't just an issue that we dealt with in polygamy. It was an issue that we dealt with in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And even up until the last decade, we still were publishing manuals that had quotes from Spencer W. Kimball discouraging interracial marriage, right? So the question of what kinds of who can marry who, what kinds of couples are allowed in the church, in some cases socially and in some cases ecclesiastically, was not just an old question. It was actually a pretty new question that we've dealt with. And so I wanted to tell the history of how we kind of worked through that particular issue as a way, as again, sort of as a not explicitly, but a parallel to the kinds of questions that we're dealing with same-sex relationships too.
Yeah. So it was great. It was kind of, I was really surprised to see how much detail you went into there. Can we talk a little bit more about some of the rhetoric around interracial marriage? What were some of the things said, and how are they similar to some of the things said today?
Yeah. So, you know, maybe there's something else that you're thinking of that if you want to prompt my memory about it, but one of the discourses that they were using was about purity. And they were really thinking about racial purity as this value, as this good. And of course, that's rooted in the kind of white supremacist rhetoric, and it's based in kind of sort of hierarchical thinking as well, that some races were sort of higher up on the hierarchy with respect to God. And of course, Latter-day Saints saw themselves as the best and the purest of all of those, right? And we had this entire language about race that for the most part just doesn't exist today. I mean, if you look at something like the B1 campaign that was done in 2018 in celebration of the 40th anniversary of the priesthood revelation, you don't see appeals to sort of the racialized groups of different people and their destinies. And so all that stuff is just totally gone. So both the kinds of purity and this discourse about just even that races had a sort of divine design, that they were given by God these different tasks. And that comes out of Southern U.S. Southern segregationist and North. So, of course, some Northerners were segregationists as well. And obviously Latter-day Saints were. But this sort of segregationist thinking was also based on this idea that God created the races as these sort of discrete things, and that it was our obligation to sort of preserve those discrete boundaries between the races. So that language then of hierarchy, the language of purity, was also the same kind of language that they were using to talk about women's roles and why it wasn't just about white supremacy, but also about patriarchy as well. And so we get this during the same time period, a lot of the language of the patriarchal order of marriage. You know, it's also a term that we just don't even hear anymore. But I grew up in the 90s hearing this. I felt like all the time that there was such a thing as the patriarchal order of marriage. Now you just won't find it in church manuals. It hasn't been spoken in general conference in a long time. The patriarchal order was also based on this notion of a sort of pure, discrete boundaries between the sexes, and that if we undertook activities that sort of blurred those boundaries or created instability between those boundaries, then we were also blurring God's will, just as we would be for the racial boundaries as well. So a lot of the same kinds of language, the same discourse about purity, around boundaries, around a hierarchy, we see as a kind of operating set of doctrinal underpinnings of a lot of the ways that church leaders were thinking about race, gender, and certainly sexuality even today. You know, we can make the same parallels about a hierarchy between hetero and homosexuality, the purity of boundaries between those, and so on, that kind of continues to influence the way that church leaders think about these things.
Well, and it seems like marriage was a big issue, which is kind of funny because a lot of the most, I don't know if violence is the right word, but the biggest opposition with Mormons in marriage, you know, first we were polygamists, we're defending polygamy, and then the U.S. government beat that out of us. And then when it comes to race issues, interracial marriage, I know Peterson and McConkie and Joseph Fielding Smith had some real fire and brimstone kind of speeches about we can't have interracial marriage. It's messing up God's plan. And so it's interesting to me, I kind of want to tie this into feminism because it ties into that as well as into gay marriage. And so it seems like Mormons are really trying to regulate marriage, that it's supposed to be whites only or blacks only or Asians only. And so could you talk a little bit more about how Mormons are trying to define marriage, and if we do it wrong, it's going to bring the downfall of civilization?
Yeah, we often end up on the wrong side of these issues, unfortunately, or at least in contemporary perspective, right? The issues that we were, the kind of perspectives that we were defending a generation or two ago aren't necessarily the ones that we hold on anymore. But yeah, they had a whole theory that that civilization was sort of dependent on these hierarchies, right? That there was a kind of divinely imposed order of the races, of sexual hierarchy, as we mentioned, between men and women, and that to our peril, you know, we would undo all of those things and risk our own, you know, nation, and risk our own civilizational stability. And you know, you can kind of understand this in the context of the Cold War, which is when many of these doctrines are really starting to be emphasized, and this rhetoric about national stability is showing up, because we're seeing the same thing happening in evangelical and Protestant fundamentalist circles as well. This sort of emphasis on very rigid racial boundaries, and of course, very rigid gender boundaries. And these things get politicized later on with the religious right, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point here. But so Latter-day Saints sort of belong to this broader culture in the ways that they're thinking about these civilizational risks in undoing these hierarchies, because the society is ordered a certain way, right? And if you reordered it in the way that the people who are arguing for racial integration or the feminists were arguing for, you know, then of course a certain group loses power, and then it's going to be chaos, and we're going to all fall to the communists or something like that, right? And they looked to the communism specifically, which had feminist elements to it. You know, women would go to work and they would say, look how terrible that society is. Therefore, you know, women going to work is a sign of communism. And so you had all these sort of larger anxieties, of course, about gender roles. But I wanted to also kind of place it in the context of a larger international story about the way that Latter-day Saints were kind of thinking in nationalistic terms and in American civilizational terms of sort of pro-democracy, pro-Western, in contrast to communism at the time, which they associated civil rights, they associated feminism with communism, and therefore, you know, these were the things that were going to end America as we knew it, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So I think what was interesting to me is, especially in the 50s and 60s, that interracial marriage would bring about the downfall of civilization. And now we have a black general authority, which was unheard of in the 50s and 60s. But this black, Peter Johnson is who I'm talking about. But he's married to a white woman. And we have an apostle. Mm-hmm. Why am I not? Gong.
Gong, yeah.
Elder Gong. He's Asian, and he has a white wife as well. So apparently, we've completely changed on this issue about whether interracial marriage is a good thing. And I think you also mentioned Mia Love. She was a black congresswoman, and she has a white husband. Talk about how we flipped from this is the downfall of civilization to totally embracing it now.
Yeah. There was so much anxiety around it. It's almost hard to fathom how much anxiety there was, you know, because it wasn't just black white marriages that they were concerned about. Also, I go in to talk a lot about the Native American, what was then called the Indian Placement Program, I believe.
That's right.
Where especially Navajo children would be brought to northern Utah and other places and placed in white homes during the school year so that they could attend the public schools in the north. And then they would go back to the Navajo reservation, and other tribes were involved in this Indian placement program as well. But of course, then what happens is people fall in love, right? And you get Native Americans and white people getting married, and all of a sudden the church starts freaking out about this. And Spencer W. Kimball, who had been a big advocate of the Indian placement program, was out there as the biggest opponent of interracial marriage, right? And the same thing happens when we're setting up BYU Hawaii, whatever it was called back then, the Polynesian College or something. I forget exactly what its name was back then. But same thing, you get sort of integration, social integration that leads to marriages and relationships. And the church is like, oh, this isn't what we meant, right? We wanted integration, but not intermarriage. So there's a lot of anxiety about that. And it is surprising that then what are we 40, 50 years later, now general authorities who were that age when they were hearing all of these messages of don't get married, don't be involved in interracial marriages, they ignored that advice, got married anyway, and now have become general authorities. So I think that those are some really interesting ones. And the Mia Love one is I found particularly interesting because it's not just the sort of racial boundaries that were being blurred in her case, but also she was, of course, working. She was a working mother, and not only working in a high demand job, but a high demand job that often took her out of state as well. And yet the church didn't seem to have any problem with it. They promoted her on the I'm a Mormon campaign. There were newspaper articles in the Deseret News talking about her and her relationship with her husband. And so I wanted to sort of trace that shift. How do we get to today where these things aren't problematic when they were to the members of the 50s and 60s? Yeah, if Joseph Fielding Smith were around today and saw what the makeup of the of the general authorities and the kinds of marriages that they were in, how many children they had, did they use birth control? Yeah, definitely, right? All of those things he would be very confused by because he was such a vehement opponent of those practices. So I wanted to understand again that these aren't, you know, it's not just the change from monogamy to polygamy. That's not the only big change that we've made with respect to marriage, and certainly not with respect to sexuality as well. It's much more recent than that, that we've been having this conversation inside of the church about who gets to marry who and what are the rules around that and so on.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Taylor Petrie. In our next conversation, we're going to move on to feminism. You know, the LDS Church was neutral towards the ERA amendment in the 1970s until they were approached by a Catholic woman named Phyllis Schlafly.
So the church gets recruited to do this and reverses itself, because at first it was saying, no, this is a political issue. We don't comment on political issues. We just care about, you know, moral issues, not political ones. But Schlafly convinces the church that this is a moral issue, that it's not just a political issue. And so the church decides to mobilize its membership in this political fight. And they start sending members to ERA conventions to shout down the leaders there and to sort of disrupt the meetings.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruption. If you'd like a paperback version of our transcripts, go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview. Also, if you'd like to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website, and I'll be able to send you a transcript as soon as they are completed, and click the subscribe button. You can also find our latest information on Facebook.com/GospelTangents, as well as we're on Twitter at GospelTangents. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. The link is at tinyurl.com/GospelTangents, and you can subscribe there. Also, please give us a 5-star review. If you want to support all of the podcasts as part of the Dialogue Podcast Network, go to lyceum.fm, that's lyceum.fm, and do a search for Dialogue Podcast Network or Gospel Tangents, because, you know, that's a pretty cool one, too. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.